On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And so it begins, another week of Conversation Radio on the Horn, America's liberal voice. And we've got a special treat that's going to get things rolling for us this evening. More on that in just a moment. Oh, let's do it now. In the studio with us, a musician, songwriter, singer, guitar player, man about town, T. Page Del Porto, who has a good handful of his creative work with us and is all set and ready to go, singing, picking, grinning, what have you. Paige is an activist, like so many of us, in the fight to save this state and this region from the depredations of mountain removal. And he writes about the topic. Right now, T. Page Del Porto is mainlining hot sauce to get him right and ready for some hot picking and grinning action. There's a lot of stuff to talk about tonight, both environmentally, politically, socially, culturally. You know how it is. I mean, that's the nature of what we do here. For me, I know. I got a story here of absolute corporate indifference to being human or human beings. I got another story here that just wearing me out on all kinds of different levels. An MSN story regarding the General Motors working people, and I think there's as much in the story about how the for-profit media view working people as there is about the actual GM problem in its own right. We have fun with Republican governors tonight. We have this Rick Santelli creature who has apparently gone full-bore, bug-sprayed, crazy, insane, says he's being threatened by the White House now, and his kids are afraid to go to school. In other words, just another day at the office. So before we get into the meat of tonight's program, however, it's not just every day we've got live music in the studio. So I want to make sure that we take advantage of that. And so I will be shifting the microphone over to T. Page Del Porto. Pardon the groaning and squeaking noises.
Of the microphone or of T. Page Del Porto?
Well, okay. it's not my creaky joints. No. T. Page Del Porto, welcome to the incredibly tiny, cramped,
spacious.
I guess we could say these are intimate surroundings, could we not? But awfully glad to have you along. And I should mention that we have other company in the room as well. Hey, Paul, shout out. Be part of the thing.
What's happening?
Yeah, that's Paul Corbett Brown, phenomenal photographer.
Let's do this.
Natalie Gray.
Yes, Natalie Gray. But see, you talk prettier than Paul does, so I wanted to make sure that I got you.
Looks prettier, too.
Yeah, don't quit your day job, Paige.
don't worry about it.
Let's talk a little bit about what you do, what motivates you, what inspires you.
Well, let's talk about my three-year-old son, three-year-old St. Patrick's Day this year. That's coming up, so we can just make this a pre-St. Pat celebration.
And, of course, he's here in West Virginia, correct?
Yes, absolutely.
So his future matters to you.
Yes,
as to the future of all of West Virginia's children. You like me are a Fayette Countyan.
Yep.
Born and raised here?
Absolutely. I was born in Montgomery, West Virginia. Actually, I was born in Charleston in the hospital, but we lived in Montgomery.
Okay.
Is that Kanawha County?
Fayette County's actually Montgomery sits on the Fayette-Kanawha line. You grew up here. When did you pick up the guitar?
I think it was I was 15. Tried the trumpet. I really didn't have huge musical background. But it was they offered I think you had to take music in school back in those days.
Wow, had to take music.
Had to.
A little different, isn't it?
It is.
Sucks.
Yeah, now, not then.
Yeah.
So you picked up a guitar and just writing and singing and so forth came natural to you?
Yeah, I would say it's natural.
So not to make you give away anything, but how long you been at it now?
How long have I been at? Well,
singer-songwriter kind of thing.
Okay, I had my great Bob Dylan moment in 1973. I was 20, 24.
Okay.
I'm 60 now.
Yeah. Couldn't tell it to look at you.
You just ain't looking in the right place.
TMI, man, TMI.
Yeah. Well, take it where you want.
Yeah, what have you got on tap for us tonight? Tell us a little bit about the songs.
Well, I brought... about all of my MTR songs, songs that have something to do with that subject, and a few others that I've written. And,
What are you going to get us started with?
It's called, you were talking about the government earlier, so let's do government song.
Okay, this is the government song, and you got one after?
Give me a break, because this is a strenuous song. It could be.
Oh, okay. All right. Sounds good. So
I got to catch my breath after these.
Okay, so T. Page Del Porto and Government Song.
Okay.
Only on the horn.
That's right.
Been in the hail, been in the hail, been in the hail, gone, get into it, money's gone, job gone. Something's wrong, better get into it, Rob. Yeah, Rob. Say rock it till the beast is dead. Rock and roll and over to the government. You sit right there, ass in a chair, cold, don't give a damn, better get into it, Rob. Now rock it till the beast is dead. Rock and roll over to the government. Money's gone, job's gone, something's wrong, better get into it, Rob. Yeah, Rob. Rock and chill, peace to stay, rock and roll, over to the government. Yeah, rock and roll, over to the government. Yeah, kick to the curb, don't say a word, gonna get hurt, don't get in a way, Rob. Come on, Rob. Rock it, till the beast is there, say rock it. Rolling over, throw the gun. Come on now. Hey. Say rock it, till the if it don't say a word, you're going to get hurt. Don't get in the way, Ron. Whoa, Ron. Rock your tail. Say, say, Ron.
Whew! You wasn't kidding. A little work involved with that.
That's only half of the song, man.
Half? Where's the other half? Did you leave it in the car?
You want to hear it?
Yeah, keep it going if you got the energy.
Okay. All right, yeah. Yeah, I think I'm a... Does it sound all right to you? I mean...
Oh, yeah.
All right, Uncle. Drag that lamb and don't fight her.
This, I tell you what, Paige. This studio hadn't jammed like that in a while. Very, very nice.
Thank you. Thank you.
I take it that you are not particularly thrilled with the state that our government is in at present.
No, I'm not. I don't know if I've just become more aware of corruptibility of, people are, it's actually getting all that much worse. Jeez, how can you even measure it?
Do you reserve more of your disdain for state or government, or do you deem the problem to be just pervasive all the way through?
Well,
who you madder at?
I go right to the heart of things, which is the heart, the human heart. Man, it's not fixable in a human way, and it seems like something's coming to a head. But I think things are just going downhill on the roller skates, and I don't know. It kind of gets off in my mind. I guess human history that has cycles to it, but things have just gotten pretty hairy.
Okay, well, you live down at the, I'm up on top of the mountain. You live down at the foot of the mountain. Are you hearing the blasting that we're hearing up here?
Oh no, fortunately not. But I have heard it because I took my son up to Beckwith. To the park last summer, and I heard it there. It's a scary, scary sound.
Yeah, well, we had a thunderstorm here last week, and I heard thunder, and I'm so used to us getting blasted now.
Yeah.
I didn't know if it was thunder or blasting. That's a sad, and that's just a sad place to be in your world.
Something's wrong somewhere. It's a sad place for civilization to be when you have to decide whether or not to eat your children.
No kidding.
To survive. And I don't think we're there yet, and yet we're not literally eating our children yet, but
no, but we're poisoning them.
Yeah. Okay.
I had a run-in with a friend of Cole over the weekend, Paige.
With a friend of Cole?
Yeah, a Fokker. I ran downtown to just get a couple of things, a little convenience store action. And I don't think about it. The fact of the matter is, I love my Stop Mountaintop Removal T-shirt, and wear it all the time. I mean, every time it comes out of the laundry, it goes on my hide. And so I had it on Saturday afternoon. Went down and went down to the convenience store. Got a couple of packs of smokes, a couple of nutritional Slim Jim meat snacks. Nutritional. That's part's a joke. And on the way out the door, this guy who'd come in behind me, my back's to him. You know, this is the way they operate. My back's to him, and all of a sudden I hear, "Co keeps lights on." And so I took the classic two count, beat, beat, turned around, looked at him, and said, "Nice slogan you got going there, Junior. Did you come up with that by yourself, or did you have help?" And turned and walked away. But it's here. It's absolutely here. This idea that there's only one way to exist in Appalachia, and that is that we can only exist by consuming ourselves. I mean, you're not that far off of it, Paige, when you talk about eating our kids. We're already poisoning them. We're certainly destroying their future. They won't have a future here if this persists. And yet, they've got terrified employees. Coke keeps lights on. I was having a conversation off air, email exchange with, our pal Judy Bonds. Judy said, "Bob, I would have looked at him and said, you know, there are these newfangled technologies called the sun and the wind.
Yeah.
It's going to be the next big thing. You ought to look into it." So I got that one in my hip pocket for later, too. You got another one ready for us, Paige? I'm telling you, I'm a fierce taskmaster. I don't get live music in here very often. I'm going to work you.
I was going to ask you, is it okay to say overthrow the government? I mean, I could change that to notify the government.
No, dude.
It's too late now.
Dude, these are the inner tubes. The FCC can't, this is freedom, man. The FCC can't, you're living it. You're living it. The FCC can't say a word about what goes on here. This is real live, honest to goodness, First Amendment fun in action.
Well, you mentioned Anstead, and since we're right in the middle of it, I did, when I heard this was going to go on, I wrote this song. It's called We Shall Rise.
Okay, sounds good. We Shall Rise, T. Page Del Porto on the horn.
Yeah. Counting crosses under the moonlight, wondering, Lord, what does it mean? When they shove the mountains into the valley with the crosses underneath, mountain people throughout the land, now is the time to make your stand. Standing right beside you is an angel band, this holy mountain to defend. We will rise, we will rise. Now is the time and we will rise. We will rise, we will rise. Now is the time, we will rise. Can you hear those
bulldozers coming. Can you hear the big machine? Getting closer every day. We all know just what it means. We will rise, we will rise. Now is the time we will rise. We will rise, we will rise. Now is time and we will rise. One sparrow falling, one grain of sand, one drop of rain from the sky. He sees the mountains, he knows their names, and he can hear a mountain cry. We will rise, we will rise. Now is the town. And we will rise, we will rise, we will rise. Now is the time, we will rise. Now is the time, now is the time.
That's mighty nice. When'd you write that?
Well, I guess it's been about a year, maybe a year and a half. Whenever I first heard the news, you know, that I was incredulous. And let's see. And where I got the title was B.J. Goodmanson.
Yeah, Rise Up West Virginia.
Yeah, she was. Going to do another one, Rise Up To, or she'd just done that, and she was going to use one of my songs, Heaven's Kind. And that was, I guess, a couple of years ago.
Talk a little bit about the creative process, Paige. Is there any way that you prefer to write? is there a particular process you follow, or is it just letting the inspiration lightning strike where it will?
Yeah, much the latter, you know. But I get a lot of inspiration from different sources. I mean, I didn't used to be this way. It was just more or less, you know, whenever it happened, it happened. When I get an idea, now my ideas are out there with Cold River Mountain Watch and, you know, Paul Brown and, you know, people out there fighting this crap, you know. So I got a whole bunch of songs that, and you know, I get an idea for a song, and it might not start out as an MTR song, but I can't think of a better thing to sing about at this point.
Indeed, indeed.
Indeed. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't exclusively write about mountaintop removal. I just finished one last night called In Our Time. Yeah, I was thinking about, you know, man, I'd like to sing it on Bob's program. I need another verse.
No, it's not done yet.
It is done. I got the lines.
Oh, you got it. Okay.
But I would. I have to tune out Bob's over. Okay.
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll take a call then. I'll move the other microphone back over to its original position, and you can have fun with the tuning pegs, and we'll take a call real quick.
There you go.
Okay. So that's exactly what we're going to do. Let's do. I hate to keep people sitting on hold. Oh. Now, see, that's what happens. Let's try this. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening, Bob.
Hey, Ed, what's up?
Not a whole lot. Disgusted and, as usual, since the Republicans are running their mouth like they are. And I just can't figure, you know, why people can't see what some of the problems are. But I wanted to comment some of the stimulus package that's going to the auto industry still yet. And I know that jobs are dependent on that, at least temporarily. But that's not the real answer in my book. The answer is bringing back jobs. So, I mean, they could turn out 10 million cars a year, but if people are not working, they're not going to be able to buy them. And why are they not working?
Because the jobs are gone.
That's right. Why are they looking at all these, or inventing these tributaries that lead to the big river? And, can't see that there's gonna have to be high tariffs, high taxes, and so forth on these things that's coming into this country, along with, checks on the food and so forth. Until they do that, we're spinning our wheels. And, I remember, and I didn't miss it but too many years, but I remember my mother and dad talking about they went through a period of time where a whole roll of bologna cost a nickel, but nobody had a nickel. And that's the same thing. They flooded the market with their goods, the different companies did. But people didn't have the money to buy them, so they laid there. And that's what you call the depression. So I just wanted to, you know, comment on that. And why don't this nation make calls to the representatives and put the heat on? But you know what the dag blame problem is?
What's that?
Is they got their money locked up. It don't hurt when you're making $165,000 a year. You're going to eat. You're going to be able to take your family out. You're going to be able to send your kids to college. But the average person that is paying their way is out of touch with what we know to be. And I'm just really out of sorts with why somebody. Well, Obama, tell you the truth, don't come out against stopping the imports. And, you know, I have a couple of friends that still go to Walmart and have a daughter that goes to Walmart. And I tried to explain to them that you are undermining your own people's jobs when you go there and buy that Chinese. Well, you can't buy some of it now in America. I said, no, because Walmart's done contracted it from China and these other countries. So.
Well, you know, and that's one of those things that we kind of have to get good at. And I know that based on a conversation we had about a week ago that there are people who are working on it. We have to find a way, Ed, to make it possible. Whether it's people using the internet and ordering, having stuff sent mail order, however that happens, people have to be able to reward and do business with the folks who are still trying to do business here and doing it ethically and doing it morally. You know, I mean, I guess the best example would be Walmart. You know, they're headquartered in Bentonville, Arkansas. Yeehaw.
Yeah, you ain't kidding.
But what kind of ethics and what kind of morals are involved with doing business with Walmart?
Well, if against unions, if you're against people getting fair wages and coverage and benefits, then that's a place you ought to go. You ought to kiss up right to them. And I'll be one to admit that because I couldn't find the stuff I needed and would have had to go to Charleston to get a couple belts, they didn't even have them at the lawnmower shop here in Beckley. I found them out there, called and asked, and they had them, and they were American-made. So in a case like that, I guess, you have to do, and that's when gas was up around $4 a gallon. I'm not going to drive to Charleston to get two $20 belts. So, but overall, I just don't have any, there's other stores that you can get most of your stuff from that you don't have to go to Walmart, and especially clothing. I tell my wife, even when she buys Christmas stuff or clothing, but I'm shocked that the VA even, I've, gotten some of their stuff, and it's marked made in China.
Sure.
And it's...
Oh, I'll never forget when my kids went off to they belong to an organization in school that teaches them to avoid tobacco. I'm all for it. So they come back and they got these little tchotchkes with them. They're little plastic fans, I guess, for clearing the air or whatever. And you turn it on, and little neon lights say, stop smoking or don't use tobacco or whatever. It's real cute. Purchased by the government of West Virginia with this anti-tobacco funding. And I couldn't, I got to ruin everything, Ed, so I got it, and I opened it, looked on the bottom, and there it is, made in China.
Yeah.
We don't have the ability to manufacture stuff in America to encourage kids not to smoke. And we got to buy that from China. It's really difficult to get around that stuff.
Yeah. And the more that the people buy like that, the more going to take over other areas. It's like a cancer. It just keeps on spreading if you buy. But I'll get off of that kick there, and I want to bring up a couple other subjects.
Sure.
One of them is these governors that are turning down stimulus packages.
Right.
And like this Republican, Bobby Jindal, however you pronounce that name. Those guys has got to be the most spiteful, hateful people.
They are.
Ever
and frankly, in a place like Louisiana, now, I understand that the folks in South Carolina are not likely to remove Mark Sanford because the folks in South Carolina have been brainwashed and had their minds poisoned where they think if the government actually tries to make their lives any better, that's sinful or God won't love them anymore or whatever. I mean, you know how it is.
Yeah.
But there's enough people in Louisiana got some backbite to them. I'd almost dare to hope that maybe the people of Louisiana might get together and decide to throw little Bobby Jindal out on his rear end.
Well, another one is Mississippi. As bad a place, and I know what's going on down there because my son-in-law from Connecticut is a preacher and went down with a group or took a group down, whichever way. And they worked down there, gave them a couple weeks' work building houses and so forth. And he knows the situation, and yet they allow politicians like that to get in and spread that bad propaganda. And it's just bite work against Obama. But the real bite of it is that those people in that state suffer by not getting whatever that state has got coming, and it's just politics. That's all you can say about those like that. And I'm telling you, someone should really just kick his ass if they could get by the state troopers. But
I'd just as soon him. I'd just as soon see him kicked out. And that's, you know, it's easily a little bit easier, and the state troopers aren't involved.
Yeah. Well,
but you know, South Carolina and Mississippi won't do that. I don't know about people in Minnesota, you know, because that Tim Pawlenty, he's as poisonous as anybody. But Louisiana, you know, well, I'd like to see Louisiana throw him out of the governor's office for starters, just to put the kibosh on. Because see, the reason he's doing this is all grandstanding in Louisiana, Ed. That guy thinks he's got a chance to be president in 2012.
Oh yeah, it's in the news that he's thinks he's got a potential of being a presidential candidate. But of course, West Virginia, the way they went from McCain over Obama, they're just stupid enough to. And I'd like to really stand up in front of an open audience and tell them how stupid we are. To have, and I got on one radio station and told them, I said, you bunch of Republicans, all of you, even the Republicans went for Hillary Clinton. It was a landslide, but yet when a black man run, you lined up against him, and both of them have their code of ethics and everything about them is fairly simple. Similar, and except Obama is smarter, I think. So I said, it's just we are pure racist. And I don't agree with the blacks in certain areas, but it's like I told you before, I'm not stupid. There's no way I would vote for a heathen like McCain. I don't know what to think about people that of that mentality.
Well, I tell you, I don't know if you've caught the latest part, Ed. This is one. I don't know if you remember back when Atlanta was having their big drought, and Georgia Governor Sonny Perdue, he called the weatherman at one of the TV stations in Atlanta to ask him, was it going to rain that day, and the weatherman said, no, not today, but we think we got a chance for tomorrow. He said, I'll call you back for tomorrow. I'll call you back tomorrow, and if it's going to rain tomorrow, then we'll have our prayer for rain that day.
Gee whiz.
And it's the truth. So
strike them dead, you know
what? Yeah, did a little bit of a greasy spot and a bolt of lightning, but unfortunately, I guess he's out of that business these days. Yeah. But it's happened again along the same lines. The governor of South Carolina, Mark Sanford, who's led this charge of, you know, it'll bankrupt us, we can't. And this, most of this money that they're turning down, Ed, remember, as somebody who in the past is, and to this day stands up for working people, most of the money that they're turning down is money for unemployment.
Mm-hmm.
People who are already out of work, people who are already suffering, people who already can't make their mortgage payments, for God's sakes. Not because they made a mistake, but because they got caught up in the George W. Bush economic miracle.
Yeah. Well, you know, the stuff behind that is politics, every bit of it. And one of the Republicans said, well, if we do that, then when that unemployment still runs out, we're going to have to put some taxes on business. And let me tell you something. We went to Pebble Beach. Went a couple times before I found out what was going on. Me and one of my friends went down, stayed 3 days, and
didn't play any golf, did you?
we went. But every day, and, you know, I didn't catch on to this, and which I'll never go back to Myrtle Beach, never. I'll never go back to that state again. Every day when, you know how your weather comes on this weather channel?
Yeah.
Here? They cut that off, and they had their own weather. And right away, you know, well, before I left the second time, I caught on what was going on. The Chamber of Commerce was taking that off. And they was putting 65-degree weather on there every day. And me and my friend got hit in the face with ice pellets the third day. We decided, wait a minute, either God don't know what's going on or the Chamber of Commerce is in control. And so, you know, and I told them when we left the breakers down there, I told them, I said, you can tell your Chamber of Commerce that when we get back to West Virginia, we're going to put out the word on what they are and how they will do to keep people there. I said, the least you all could have done here would have been us to give us another time period to come back in and told us the truth about the weather, or let the weather station come on, which would have given us the right forecast.
Well, I tell you what they're doing now, Ed. The governor of South Carolina was on Washington Journal this morning on C-SPAN, and he took a call from Charleston, South Carolina, from a fellow who said he lost his job because he's been taking care of his mama and his sister because both of them are gravely ill. Well, you just listen to what Governor Sanford has to offer him.
Let's hear from South Carolina next. Good morning to Charleston.
Good morning.
Hi there.
I am a 44 male trying to take care of my sister who has vasculitis of the brain and is blind now at American University. Her children lives with me and my mother, who has the beginning stage of Alzheimer's. We have not received any assistance on all the phone calls in which we have made and trying to get help. We are living off of I lost my job because I've been taking care of my family. Governor, I'm not going to give you my whole life history. My thing is, I think you're wrong. No disrespect to you and the office in which you hold. I just think you're wrong. We pay taxes into the federal government for times like this. A lot of people in South Carolina are hurting. And if this money can come and help us out, we need it. That's why I'm thankful that Representative Clyburn put the policy in that if you don't want to take it, the legislature can go override you and get the money. People need it here. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to see you political, but sound like it is to me.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of Republican friends who told me you might be one of the ones we tapped for 2012. I hope that's not playing politics with this. People in South Carolina are hurting. You know how unemployment rate is high right now and going up higher. We're running out of money in the unemployment thing. We need money for that. The people out here need help, and I'm one of them. I can't get no help.
We'll get a response, Charleston.
Now wait for this.
Well, I'd say hello to Charleston because it's home. And I'd say hello to this fellow this morning and say that my prayers are going to be with he and his family, because it sounds like he's in an awfully tough spot.
That's it.
Yeah, well, I got an answer for him. Prayers are answered by people that respond to what Christ wanted us to be. It's not by some bunch of garbage words like he spilled out there.
Kind of reminds you of what Joe Hill wrote, though, doesn't it?
Yep.
Live on hay day by day. There'll be pie in the sky when you die.
Yeah, right.
I mean, that's all, and that's the way it is with you. You know, look, Ed, they don't care. You know, this guy's still having his shrimp and grits. He's still having his lobster lunch.
Yeah. You know what? I would have respected him more if he'd have just told the guy, go to hell.
Well, that is kind of what he did now, isn't it?
That is. But I like his direct answers. So
God bless you. We're going to pray for you.
Yeah.
But we ain't going to help you. Mm-mm.
Yeah, I bet he's in a position with the hatred in his heart to get a prayer through. I'd hate to think that I was depending on him for a prayer getting through the roof. I don't even think my roof would.
Well, then he had the nerve, Sanford did have the nerve to go on and say that South Carolina couldn't extend unemployment benefits because, and this is his words, increasing the tax on unemployment insurance would negatively impact the caller's family. That's right. Them having money would negatively impact their family. You know how it is with poor folks. You give them a little bit of money, next thing you know they want to be eating food and drinking clean water and getting all uppity.
Yeah. Give them a little bit of money and they take a day off from work. You know, you give them too much money. That's the reason that companies fight giving a guy a dollar on the hour, because he might take a Friday or a Monday off now and then. Same old thing. These friends of COVID, we got so much working against the average person, and the state of ignorance they are in is really pitiful. You know, when you talk about the Friends of Coal that I heard you speak of a while ago, the Chamber of Commerce, the Manufacturers Association, John Birch Society, and Heritage, and probably there is at least double that many that fight labor. One, you know, and I'm not speaking about union labor. I'm speaking about labor, working people. You've got every organization you come to, you before you help them or give them a chance, and you better take a check on them, because just about every one of them fight against the working class people.
Well, and I've got another example of that kind of class warfare a little bit later in the program. Story I read over at MSN today. Really quite sickening. And we'll get to it along the way. Ed, it's good to hear from you. Want me to put you back on hold? We're going to get a little more music going on here.
Well, let me go one thing and see what you think that's coming to pass. That's tax by the mile. What?
No, that's not. No. Deal? No. Not going to happen. Not going to happen.
Okay. I didn't think anybody was ignorant enough to really try that. But anyway, I do want to be put on hold. I haven't listened for over a week, so.
Okay, well, I'll put you back there, Ed. Thanks for your thoughts. Good to hear from you.
Okay, buddy.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
All righty, bye.
It's a regular Fayette County party this evening. We got T. Page Del Porto from Fayette County. That's our buddy Ed from the other side of the river in Fayette County, and. Well, this fabulous opulent. Shh! Don't tell them. It's radio. They don't know it's the size of a shoebox. Fabulous opulent studios here at the Mountain Command. Yeah, got to do some of that flush Flimball egoism. Nah, it's cramped in here, but we're having a doggone good time. And Paige, you
flatulence in broadcasting.
Dad.
Is that original or what? I don't know. Am I the first to come up with that? I need to know.
You may well be.
I need to know this crap, man. I want credit for it.
That's right. That's right. Well, you know, it was a horn listener who invented the name we use for him here, and that is Flush Flemball.
That's good.
So you got another one for us?
Yeah, I do. It's called Massey's Farm. I wrote this and in response to Judy Bond was asking me to come and play at a protest. I just thought I needed another song. So I took Bob Dylan's Maggie's Farm. I was thinking about that for quite a while, about changing that to Massey's Farm. So I was sitting in front of the burger cart. You know where the burger cart's at?
Oh, I know where the burger cart's at.
Yeah, I was in the parking lot. It was about 11 o'clock at night.
Good eats.
Yeah. I didn't even eat anything, man. I just wrote the song. That's bad, isn't it? So we owe this one to Maggie's Farm and Burger Cart.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
But it's Massey's Farm.
It's Massey's. Massey's Farm. I was talking to Paul. It should be Massa. Massa's Farm.
Well,
is that you or Paul? No, I was talking to Bo.
All right, so here we go.
Yeah, Massey's Farm. Well, I ain't gonna work on Massey's Farm no more. Ain't gonna work on Massey's Farm no more. He hands you a nickel, he hands you a dime. He has with a grin, are you having a good time? Then he builds a silo near the kids next door. Ain't gonna work, ain't gonna work, ain't gonna work on Massey's Farm no more. No, I ain't gonna work for Massey's Ma no more. Ain't gonna work for Massey's Ma no more. Sits down at your table with a fork in your eye. She's always got a hand out for another piece of pie. She's the last to leave the first ass. Yeah.
Mickey Mouse's friend no more. Puts up a billboard, say, oh yes, hurry, I'm clean and I'm neutral. If you disagree, I'll spew a little coal ash on your porch. I ain't gonna work, ain't gonna work. No, I ain't gonna work for Mouse's mind no more. Ain't gonna work for Mouse's mind no more. Pour loose the water, pour loose the stream. Close up the mountains and the American dream. A team of lawyers, such as slow. Ain't gonna work, ain't gonna work, ain't gonna work, ain't gonna work.
Man, that's something.
Yeah.
You get a little workout in the process, too, Paige.
Yeah, I do.
I think them feet of yours just run a 40 or so.
I don't get much exercise except chasing my little boy in Maggie's farm.
was that the one you were referring to last time you said you'd just written, or is there another one?
No. It's that's a different one. But I want to do something fun and up-tempo.
Okay.
The other one's a real thoughtful one. I don't know if I can get too thoughtful here.
Oh, no.
I'll try.
No, trust me, this is about the thoughtfulest radio network going on. Oh, heavens to Betsy, yeah.
Yeah, well. Oh, Lordy, every time I do that, I get out of tune.
Well, you kind of got to do that once in a while.
Gotta tune that once in a while. Tune it.
Yeah, that's open Dylan tuning.
Who cares? Get my guitar out of tune and bust my finger when I play like that. That's why I stomp my feet. So I don't hurt my finger. So, you want me to do another?
Yeah, whatever you're up for, up-tempo, down-tempo, however you like it.
Oh, I'm ready for up-tempo.
All right, bring us some up-tempo.
This one is called Who Did This? Oh, I might need a drink of coffee before I do this one.
Yeah, that's what we call it around here, coffee.
I wish, man.
Put the coffee in my coffee.
Oh. To the mountain. All right. Mountain's gone, nothing left but rock I was weeping on. Who did this? Who did this? Son of a bitch, who did this? Another mountain, another day. Peabody's coal train, hold it away, hold it away, hold it away, hold it away, hold it away. Son of a bitch, son of a bitch, son of a B-I-T-C-A, son of a bitch. Well, I am mountain born, now my mountain's gone, now who did this? Thank you.
found the love. All I found was found the blood. Look at this. Look at this. Son of a B-I-G-C-H. Look at this. Yes, I'm mountain born. Down my mountain skull. Look at this.
That's up tempo, all right. A little bit on the angry side.
Possibly. I don't know. Did I sound angry?
Yeah, I'd say it's a little worked. T-Page Del Porto.
I think it's called for in these certain situations. I'm not saying all situations, but you know, there's got to be some anger out there.
Well,
I'm
what
sure
you know?
I'm
what? Yeah. What's it? Well, and that's the next question. What's a person supposed to feel when they? When they step out of the bushes and trees and get their eyeballs fill up with something like Hell's Gate down at down at Caford Mountain. What are you supposed to feel?
What are you supposed to say? That's what people say. They
yeah, I've heard it happen.
Well, you know, I mean, I call flyovers cryovers because everybody goes up in the airplane, looks at what's going on, starts crying.
Yeah. And yeah, you do. You walk out and you don't. It doesn't necessarily look like that's where you're going, but you walk out and you see what's going on, and then that's the first phrase out of your mouth, Paige. Son of a. Who did this?
Say again.
We all did it.
Yeah, there you go.
We did this.
They don't mind calling for sport.
Well, you know, our leaders are supposed to protect us sometimes from ourselves. Direct us sometimes in the right direction, but you know that don't happen here.
Well, I've been talking for a while about how it happens and who lets it happen. And you know, we fight this. There's not a person in this room. There's not a person in this entire house who isn't actively engaged in trying to end this, and who wouldn't make the sacrifices necessary to end it. But the fact of the matter is that the mountain removal coal is about, what, 30% of Appalachian coal? I think that was the number that Rory McElmoyle gave me. And it is a negligible figure in the whole coal scheme of the rest of the country.
Yeah.
The reason we get this stuff is because it can be done cheaply and we look the other way. And, you know, just like that guy in the convenience store on Saturday, he's been taught to mouth words the way that I don't know, the way that people mouthed the words of the catechism in centuries past.
Yeah, there you go. Catechism.
You know, all he has to do is say, "Coal keeps lights on."
Coal keeps lights on.
And the other side says, "Clean, green, carbon neutral." Hallelujah. Praise God. Keeps lights on. But the fact of the matter was, there was a million responses to that little dude the other day. One of them was, "Didn't keep the lights on very well when the winds blew at 40 miles an hour." You know, coal can't keep the lights on in a 40-mile-an-hour wind, for the love of God.
Well, I like the darkness. You know, when it's dark, it's a good thing sometimes.
Well, that's when we're supposed to rest, because we're not, but yeah. But this is all.
And I like it a hell of a lot better than destroying mountains for all time. For everybody.
Well, they've painted a scenario, and it's a false dichotomy between no mountaintop removal and sitting in the dark. Mm-hmm. The fact of the matter is, as people like Judy Bonds and Lorella Scarborough and Rory McIlmoyle and Nick Regalado and Matt Norpell and all the folks in the
all
movement
around.
Have time and time again, that's not the choice. It's not remove the mountains or sit in the dark. You know, the real choice is leave the mountains where they are and start dealing with the energy sources that this natural system has.
Amen.
Wind blows, sun shines. You know, when the sun's not, you know, wind is highest at night. Isn't that neat how that balances out? At the time when you're not generating
beautiful.
Energy from the
that's,
sun,
it's beautiful.
The wind is doing what the wind is supposed to do. Isn't that something like a bilateral system? I mean, isn't there some sort of funny, fancy, scientific way of it? Yeah.
That's intelligent design.
Symbiotic? There's another one. Symbiotic? But, you know, try telling that to the coal keeps lights on. Because he's been terrorized. Now, he doesn't live around the mess he makes. Most of them don't. He goes home to some gated community or lives way the heck far away from what he does. But he'll stand in my community and tell me, "Coal keeps lights on." But he doesn't live here, and he doesn't deal with it. But when he goes to work, and this is the interesting part, when he goes to work, it's in his paycheck. It's in the memos on the bulletin board. It's all about, "Those environmentalists are trying to ruin you. They want you on welfare. Those environmentalists want you to starve. They don't care if your children get an education. Those environmentalists are your enemy." And that's how you wind up with the eliminationist rhetoric that the coal industry is so good at. Whether they're writing letters to the editor talking about dropping a mountain on somebody who opposes what they do, or whether they're screaming, you know, whether they're screaming down a priest in the middle of a prayer. That's how they operate. But all of those employees are responding to the constant terrorism to which they are subjected by their employers, by the executives. You know, if you want to get right down to it, the executives are the terrorists. Now, I'm not one to write it off and say, well, you know, they're only following orders. Because, you know, if you're up there and you're doing that evil business, you've got a stake in it. You're a stakeholder. You've got an ownership interest in it.
Everybody has a choice.
Yeah, but there are choices to be made. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people have made them and refused to participate in that kind of stuff. You know, not that I'm lauding myself, but a few years back I made a decision that I would no longer screw with people's lives. And I stopped. And there's been a price to pay. But I get to sleep at night, and I get to not mind looking at myself in the mirror. And I'd say overall it's much more beneficial. Let's see, what's going on here? Tell you what, Paige, you want to do a song? You want to take a little break, and we'll take a couple of phone calls?
I got another one here.
Got another one? Okay. Well, if you're on hold, stay there. We'll come to you here in a minute. What do you got for us this time, Paige?
Well, this is a non-angry song.
Okay.
And I just wrote it.
Yeah. Happy little tune.
I was.
Are there any butterflies in it?
Let me see. Let me check. No.
No, no butterflies. Okay. Butterfly. You'll work on butterflies.
Okay, hey, there's cool. A horn in this song.
There's a horn?
There's a horn.
Okay.
So I thought of you when I
yeah, because you're
when
on
I
horn.
Wrote that.
Yeah, right.
Sure I did.
Okay, yeah, I know. All the time. What's the name of the song?
It's called Let It Rain.
Let It Rain, all right, by T. Page Del Porto right here on the horn.
Sitting in the rain, trying to write a song. Lord, I miss the way we loved when we were young. Raindrops falling on my window. Pain, could it be you're telling me, okay? Everything's gonna be okay, let it rain. Let it rain down on me. Let it rain. I wish there was a way to get you on the horn. If heaven had a phone, we'd be talking up the storm. Raindrops falling on my window pane. Could it be you're telling me, okay? Everything's gonna be okay. Let it rain. Let it rain down on me. Let it rain. How can I write a song? Curtains always drawn, shadows on the wall, been there since the dawn. Raindrops falling on my window pane. Could it be you're telling me, okay? Everything's gonna be okay. Let it rain. Down on me, let it rain, let it rain. Just a little note to say I loved you so. Lord, I rue the day I had to let you go. Raindrops falling on my window pane. Could it be that telling me, okay, everything's gonna be okay. Let it rain, let it rain down on me. Let it rain. Sitting in the rain, trying to write a song. Lord, I miss the way we loved when we were young. Raindrops falling on my window pane. Could it be that they're telling me, okay, everything's gonna be okay? Let it rain, let it rain.
That's not even a little bit angry.
I can do better, man.
Sometimes, are you T. Page Del Porto? Are you telling me sometimes? Are you telling me sometimes you just sit around being happy?
No, I'm not telling you that, man. But it might be true.
But none to happen.
Yeah, there's. I think you know. There's a time for happiness. There's a time for all these things. Ecclesiastes.
Yeah, there you go.
What was that song? Pete Seeger. Do we have a thing? Turn.
Sure, yeah.
Birds did it. There is a season turn and a time for every purpose
under heaven. Yeah, see, when it comes to music, I have to speak my lines like Rex Harrison or Yul Brynner in an old Broadway musical because, well, you know, I don't sing.
Like Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
Oh, that's mean.
That was mean.
Well, sorry, Bob.
Well,
it's our show.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, that's true. It's reality creeping in there. Well, I'll tell you what, do you need to retune or sit back or chill? Or I'll take a couple of phone calls and you get ready to go, okay?
That sounds good.
I don't mean like go like leave, but I mean get ready to...
Get the hell out.
No, no, no.
What you mean?
No, get it up and get ready to set them up and knock them down again.
Sounds famous.
Yes, indeed. So let's take a couple of phone calls and see what's going on hereabouts.
Good evening, Brother Bob.
Brother Luther, how are you?
Sorry, I had to leave you at the top of the hour. I had to come back or clean in the office.
Well, I understand. It works out that way sometimes.
I come through with a vacuum cleaner, I leave. That's time. Leslie.
Yeah, that makes for some tough radio, the vacuum cleaner.
I just noticed this past weekend, we had a couple of stories that show the absolute insanity in our media. Okay, to start with, we have the weekend, we found out that, oh, by golly, we're coming back to the Chandra Levy story.
Oh, yeah, did you just, I wanted to hit my head into a wall when I saw that. Oh, please.
Well, you know, and the thing gets...
Did they find out that a shark did it?
Well, you know, the thing got me is if you go to alternate, Jeff Cohen's got a thing and reminding you some of the things that were going on at the same time that, oh, by the way, we couldn't talk about because we had to talk about Chandra Levy. You know, we couldn't talk about anything that happened to do, you know, remember this was the summer of 2001.
Oh, yes.
The only reason Chandra Levy left, and Gary Condit left the stage was because it had something happen on September 11th. Oh, finally.
Well, that's the truth.
But, you know, it's amazing to me that, they were talking about it today and I tried to ride Howie, of course that's a useless thing, but I do it every once in a while just to exercise the demons. And like, isn't it amazing though how for a full summer, better than a summer probably, we had people accusing a man of murder on air, people on cable and on the alphabets, and not one of them was fired. You know, if any other company, any other profession did it, the people at the TV, at media would be just absolutely screaming for somebody's head, saying, how dare you misrepresent? How dare you, you know, lie to the people? You want to make it up as you go along.
Right.
But amazingly enough, not one person on air that I know of got fired or demoted over that one.
Well, no, they're only paid to be correct. I mean, you can only ask so much of people.
Well, the other one this weekend, actually this started Thursday night, was this lunatic over at CNBC having his fit on the air.
Oh, Santelli?
Santelli?
Yeah. This guy's insane.
Well, the thing that gets me is nowhere have I seen one person stick a microphone in his mouth, in his face, going, well, gee, where were you 2 months ago when it was Lehman Brothers or it was, you know, all these other houses that we've had to, now, I don't have kids, but you do, and grandkids and all that, where people who have grandkids are essentially had to put their grandkids another decade in debt.
Yeah.
To get these people out of trouble. But amazingly enough, when they make a mistake, we're supposed to save them. But this guy was just so incensed that we're bailing out people who made bad loan investments.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, but it's not just him, Luke. He's among the worst.
I know. He's just the only one that said it openly.
But there's other manifestations of it. I've got a story here. I mentioned it at the top of the hour or the top of the program. I got a story here from MSN today. And, just by way of a teaser, and people can go look it up or whatever. The headline is, hey, GM, can I retire at 48 too? You know, as per usual, the for-profit media in this country have to keep working people pitted against each other. They have to create this impression that somehow or another people who had a good deal with one of the car makers were getting it over on the rest of America. When it, you know, that's not the fact.
When you work 30 years, I mean, if you're 48, okay, since you're 18.
Yeah, there's the nut of the question, Luke. How much of a citizen How much of a person's life does a citizen of this republic owe to the country? I mean, because I'm taking it from that, you know, working 30 years for somebody's not enough. That if you've worked since you were 18 years old, by God, you need to work till your joints don't work anymore and you fall over and die.
Well, let me tell you the fun story, you know, about mine a little bit. December of this year, I will reach what they call our rule of 80. I'll be 51 years old, and I've worked for my company for 29 years. So I can retire, theoretically. Right now, if a person quit a job they've got, they're out of their mind.
Yes, they are.
But you know, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, I wish I could retire at this age, but unfortunately, you know, it's like saying, you know, you got people now that have retired 5 or 6 years and are going back to work because, amazingly enough, retirement went away on them.
Welcome to Walmart.
And the other one, isn't it amazing how they jumping down on certain people? But amazingly enough, was it Howie on Sunday had Bernie Goldberg in to talk, you know, about how evil the media was to treat Sarah Palin and other things. And I'm sitting there going, isn't it amazing? Nowhere in that whole interview did Howie ask Bernie about this new cut and paste theory of interviews.
Yeah, no. Bernie's getting a little bit crabby. What do you call it? A slobbering love fest?
Oh yeah. I mean,
With Obama, yeah.
This is Bernie Goldberg, who, if people don't know it, in his latest book has an interview that he reports between Tom Brokaw and I believe it's Charlie Rose. That amazingly enough. Answer one was not good enough, so Mr. Goldberg took answer number 4 and put it to question number 1. I mean, does that mean we all get to start now playing around with everybody's answers? Just take which one we want and put it to what question we want to do?
Boy, well, if you're a right winger and you're living on the welfare teat of conservative America, it absolutely means that.
You know, it's like I say, if that's going to be the way it's going to run, boy, we can have some fun with some people. You know,
let's start with that skinny blonde woman.
Oh no, I want to start with the fat pig man. Oh, you see the other one this week that I saw Mr. Olbermann come up with, where he exposed the fact that good old the one he now calls the manatee, Mr. Hannity, apparently was complaining about this fella that they just arrested. You know, for was it Crawford or? What was the gold seller?
Oh, yeah, Stanford.
Guess who was doing commercials for him?
Hey, you know, I saw that story, Luke, and I was so proud of myself because I was so far ahead of the I was so far ahead of the curve on that. I know it's more than a year now that I've been talking about the fact that right-wing radio survives on buy gold now. There's never been a better time to buy gold. Gold is your best investment. Call Stanford and Associates Gold. You need gold now. I'm buying gold right now. That's my hedge against inflation. Buy gold now. Yeah. I had to get out the little tattered robe with the moon and stars on it and the cracked magic eight ball just to remind myself how prophetic I'd been.
You know, it's one of those things. It's like saying it's amazing how they seem to forget that, you know, there is these things called videotape and audio tape. By God, we can actually go back and look what they actually said. Holy bee.
Yeah, the life support system for a haircut, Sean Hannity job, had actually been out there participating in Stanford's fraud and encouraging other people to go in and get suckered.
Isn't that what they call an accessory?
Before the fact, and in most jurisdictions, that before and after the fact becomes kind of interesting because that's felony. In some states, that's felony.
Yeah, you just wonder if somebody could walk in there with a pair of handcuffs, and say, "Come on, Sean, downtown, we got a little talk."
Yeah, time for the cavity search, Sean. Try not to enjoy it too much.
Somebody get out the fire hose. We're gonna have some fun, boys.
Not the hair. Don't touch the hair. The hair is perfect.
Well, that's okay. It's like Ronnie Reagan's hair. You know how it is. I used to say the thing that we could have a nuclear attack and we'd never know it because Ronnie's hair would still be in place. It'd be the only thing left, but it would still be in place.
Yeah, I know. There was something about Saint Reagan. Oh, I know what it was. Oh my God, did you see this, Luke? Apparently, one of our own, somebody that I enjoy reading from time to time, Will Bunch. Will Bunch issued a sort of a mea culpa or no, not really a mea culpa. It's more like historical rehabilitation for Ronald Reagan.
Oh.
I mean, I read it, and I think I understand what Bunch was getting at, and he's out hustling a book, so that's how that works. But he's got a book out now called, what's it called? Tear Down This Myth, How the Reagan Legacy Has Distorted Our Politics and Haunts Our Future. And he said, I can't imagine, particularly torture, I just doubt that would have been something that would have been condoned during the Reagan administration. Now, this guy's supposed to be a liberal.
It's like, look, I'm sorry, you know, it's like, say, that first 4 years of the Reagan administration, he committed so many things that now we have screwed up some bad. You know, it's like, oh.
Well, you know, I'm thinking, I saw that, and the first thing I thought of was, you know, John Negroponte, Elliot Abrams,
Dexter,
that death squads, you know, piles of human skulls in Central America. Brought to you courtesy, and these were people like mothers forced to watch their children being murdered, and this was all accomplished by the Reagan administration.
You got to remember, they were down there, what was it, slaying? They were they had a for some reason
shooting like priests. That. I mean, you know, every nasty thing you can come up, they were doing it.
It was like every week they came up with a new story where, for some reason, down there they just don't like nuns apparently. I mean, between nuns and priests, it was like they were keeping a tally, trying to see who could get more, have a contest.
No, I know, like, pull, you know, right. Well, that was really tasteless on my part. I apologize. But I couldn't. You know, Will Bunch is a smart guy.
You know, it's one of those things we talked about this a couple of months ago. I remember we were talking about. We said, you know, if we were playing by the same rules we're playing now in the mid 1980s, we could arrest Ronnie for being a terrorist sympathizer.
Well, check it out. This is a quote from Will Bunch. It'll make you scream a little bit, Luke. He actually was kind of in fact, this was used in a headline in the Washington Post, talking about Reagan. He was actually kind of a pussycat, so to speak, when it came to the job of killing people through various acts of war. I mean, the right wing's doing enough historical revisionism.
It's like every time
stop.
You turn around.
Please stop.
It's like they don't need no help. They've got, you know, was it good old... there every time you turn around trying, you know, tearing anything that says anything bad about Ronnie, you know, we have to have that cut out of the paper. It don't matter, even though, you know, after those 20-year-old archives, so what, cut it out, because he wants everybody, like I say, he wants to have Ronnie canonized. He ain't gonna be satisfied till he is.
Well, and the other thing, Luke, I think it's time that we take we make U.S. News and World Report, they got to come up with a new title for their magazine.
I know. It
did you? Are you familiar with this? They published a poll.
The president's poll thing.
No, which female politician would run the best daycare center?
Oh no, I haven't seen this one. This is good.
Yeah. Well, the real knee slapper out of this is that Sarah Palin, you know, Godzilla from Wasilla, is running away with it.
God.
With Michelle Obama in second.
You mean the Godzilla from Wasilla who came in and essentially threw her grandson into her daughter's arms to keep her quit talking during the interview?
Yeah, that one.
She was talking about how abstinence don't work.
Right. Yeah, that one. It was a choice between Mussolini, Michelle Obama, Hillary Clinton, and Nancy Pelosi. And Mussolini's way out in front, or was last I checked, which I find just astonishing.
You were talking about this a while back, last week. I saw the thing over at Huffington Post where the guy was right, whoever it was, I can't remember, fuck the people who's trying to get the state to do things.
Oh, no. Diane Sawyer, yeah, she's all done. She found out that the Appalachian children have bad teeth because of Mountain Dew, and she, you know, problem solved, story over, bits ended, yeah. Now, I don't have to worry about any toxins in the water, any poisons. That's Mountain Dew mouth. That's it. She actually gave it she diagnosed it. Mountain Dew mouth. Yeah.
But, you know, it was just interesting to see, you know, because I'm glad that story came out, but I didn't realize they were doing it up in Kentucky, too. You know, I mean, they had Sleigh Judd, who's Kentuckian.
Right.
You know, she was up there lending her name to it and trying to get them to stop it. And also in Kentucky, we saw today that their senator lifted up his pants and showed his red rear end.
Oh, Jim Bunning.
Oh.
And he's mad at everybody.
Well, you know what the fun part was they were talking about this evening? And I say fun in an ironic, stupid way. When he put out his statement apologizing, he misspelled Justice Ginsburg's name twice.
Yeah, after declaring, she's a dead one. She's got the kind of cancer you don't get well from.
Yeah, she's going to be dead by the end of the year.
Nobody makes it past 9 months with that. And he's, and it's not like he's sitting at the end of the bar and he's, he's senator from Kentucky. He's probably got a permanent supply of bottled in bond and stuff like that. If you're a senator from Kentucky, that ought to be one of the perks. But it's not like he's sitting there at the end of the bar and just loaded and talking crazy stuff. He was addressing the Lincoln Day dinner in Kentucky. This was a public statement, and he's sitting there prattling away, wishing death on a cancer victim who happens to be sitting on the Supreme Court of the United States.
She got the kind of cancer you don't get well from.
Could you imagine if somebody on the left made some comment, say, about good old Tony the Fish? Or, either one of them, if we were talking about Scalia. If we said something like that about Scalia, oh, my God, could you imagine what kind of a firestorm that would start? Oh. If we said, boy, don't that look sort of like oral cancer there? Maybe he's been chewing some type of...
It's not like Senator Jim Bunning is even in the same realm as, Frist. Frist was at least a doctor, a cat killer. No, this guy's a former baseball player.
Yeah.
And he's sitting, now granted, Bill the Cat Killer Frist was able to diagnose a woman via videotape.
Which he still ain't apologized a whole lot for.
No, but you got Jim Bunning out here who's just channeling his inner Marcus Welby saying, even though she was operated on usually 9 months is the longest anybody'd live after being diagnosed with pancreatic cancer.
That's what I say. Do you still use leeches, Mr. Bunning? Keep a jar of them under the bed just in case?
Bone, nose, grass skirt, much chanting, get well. No. Of course, there's been a lot of talk about the fact that, he doesn't have that, but there's some speculation out there that he may be mad as a hatter.
Sniffing too much
horse hide on the, or pine tar or... Delaware River clay or something for baseball.
Him in front of him, you know how that goes. You got him and you got, what's that horse's ass on the House side, that was making all the statements the other day, last week. You know what I mean? He's going to have to work awful hard to prove he's crazier than they are. Because they got a couple of legs up on him.
They're branding crazy right now. This is crazy with new and improved in front of the word.
Oh, and the fun one, I think, for the last week is now we have a new head of the RNC who's going to go hip hop on us.
Oh yeah, I love that. Michael Steele is
a couple of good fun ones over his on that. Oh.
Yeah, and somebody called him on the fact that he said this was going to be off the hook. And somebody said, man, that hadn't been a phrase for 25 years. Michael Steele thinking about the new hip hop generation, the Sanford and Son theme plays for him in his head.
That's about as far up as he is. It's like, come on, catch up the time machine, come on.
Yeah, and Rush Limbaugh plays the Jeffersons theme for Obama. Nah, I think he's kind of playing it for the wrong guy. Oh, God, I'm going to get myself in trouble. Hey, Luke, I got to roll along. We're going to work a couple more tunes in here.
Howdy.
All right, take care, brother. Our buddy Luke calling from the hills of East Tennessee, and we're going to come back to the phones in just a minute or so. But you don't just fritter away an evening when you've got when you've got a singer songwriter like T. Page Del Porto in the studio. So we're gonna see what Page has got ready to go this time around.
Okay.
Wait. No, what you got cooking, Page?
Well, this is that song I was telling you about. In our time. That I finished, I think I finished it. You just never know with these songs, man. But you just got to pull the plug on them, at some point and say, it's done. Senator Bunning, when it's finished, I don't, Might have 9 months yet to go, man. I have no idea.
That's the kind of songwriting you don't recover from, T.J.
I ain't recovered from it yet. I hope I don't. Thank you, Lord, supplying the creativity here. This song, I don't know, man. It's been a month since I started this. I just started it with this, the three words, In Our Time.
You know, that was the name of the first collection of short stories that Ernest Hemingway ever published?
No shit.
Yeah.
I bet that's what he said. No shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Were they any good?
Oh, yeah. They
was he any good?
Yeah, he could string a sentence
was
together.
Was he a writer or something?
Yeah, right. And he's a very famous alcoholic.
All right, well, thanks for intimidating the hell out of me.
Oh, well, you know, I do it professionally, Paige.
Well, this song, you know, it's maybe my answer to Imagine by John Lennon, Every Grain of Sand, and I didn't write it, of course, as the answer, because how are you going to answer that? Every Grain of Sand by Bob Dylan. But I went through several tunes, you know, looking for the right tune. And each one, I was like, oh, that's it. I got it, you know. Then it was back to the
drawing board.
Yeah. I was going to try to think of a musical term for drawing board. But it's called In Our Time. The wall is silent. Trees will lean to guide us. Mystery is illumined. At last, we become human. Olive brown. Just fill the air till doves of peace hover there in our time, our time. Be the finish when we were just beginning with olive branches fill the air will dust of perfect peace appear in our time. Oh, in our time, our time, our time, oh, our time, our time. The branches fill the air will come a perfect peace appear in our time. Ooh.
was pretty.
Yeah.
It was very pretty.
Thank you.
I got a question coming in from our chief engineer, who's down in Sydney, Australia. He's also a musician in his own right of considerable talent. And wants to know, Paige, now you mentioned Bob Dylan a couple of times. Who do you consider your influences? Who are you a big fan of?
Oh, well, let's see. I have to think about that. But, yeah, at first it was Bob Dylan, yeah. Course.
Yeah, you said you had your Dylan moment.
I did my Dylan moment. You know, all them guys. I had a Woody Guthrie moment, too. Well, one of these days I hope I have a Paige DePorter moment.
Or somebody will have one. And, yeah. Yeah. You never know. You never know who you're getting out to. There may be somebody out there right now who, give it a couple of years, they'll have their Paige DePorter moment.
Judy Bond moment. But influence, yeah. I mean, I got bit by the Dylan bug real bad. I mean, and, you know, music's just, you know, saved my life, really. Maybe not literally, but,
Needless to say.
Sitting there on that bed in Bangor, Maine, and just like a light bulb went off in my head, you know, this is what you can do with your life. You know, and I never knew what I could do with my life.
Okay, let me ask the tough follow-up question. What were you doing in Bangor, Maine?
I was recovering from something. I started out in Morgantown, West Virginia, and I hitchhiked to California, then up to Canada, and then back over to Nova Scotia, and then... I guess I kind of decided to light somewhere, and I just happened to be Bangor, Maine. Crazy, man. It's just crazy.
And so, but as we've already established, you're, you know, born and bred West Virginian Appalachian person. When you get away from here, when you get away from this region, do you feel it calling you? Does it call you home?
Hell yeah. I'm serious. Yeah, I lived in Tennessee. You know, Nashville, you know, I got that bug, too. But, you know, it was, you know, I really had the, you know, the, when you're missing something so bad, you get kind of the jitters or something. What's it called? Withdrawal.
Yeah.
For the mountains and the river. Two things that I really missed. Because you couldn't get to the river like I can. You know, it's always there. The mountains. There's definitely a physical emptiness, not having your mountains around you.
Yeah, because where you live, you're right on the banks of the rather newly formed Kanawha after the New River and the Gauley come together to form the Kanawha. You're right there on the banks of that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So when what they're doing up here on the mountain,
yeah,
as they persist in the destruction not only of the mountain but the river systems. that'll tell on you downstream, won't it?
Well, I ain't drinking the water anymore. It's a sad thing to say. I'm drinking bottled water. First time in my life that I've gone to, you know, that taking those measures. I'm scared of, you know, drinking the damn water. You know, the Bush administration, and we're still basically under that. You know, you can't trust them to say, you know, your water's clean, boy. Go ahead and drink it. You drink it.
Yeah.
You drink it first, Bush.
Yeah, have a big glass.
Have a big glass. So, yeah. Yeah, it's sad. I mean, it has, you know, I think I've heard that there's people in Golly Bridge that are getting bladder problems,
mm-hmm.
you know, from the water, from the mining, from selenium. On down the road at Smithers, Joe Lovett just fought a battle, a legal battle with Massey. I was going to be a witness, but they settled out of court. But they were dumping selenium in. So
what? Wait, what? Huh?
Oh yeah. Well, that's what they do, man.
dumping selenium? No, because we had a meeting, Paige. We had some meeting up here, and the guy. We done had a meeting.
And the fellas
from the DEP in
fellers,
their, in,
they told you.
And they was wearing their official DEP uniform with all kinds of had hats and patches and it's all kinds of official.
I was wrong. I'm backing up. They come
and told us that when they'd get into some selenium up there on that mountaintop, that they put it over on a place on that mountaintop where it's dry and no water will ever get to it up on that mountaintop. Where it's dry and no water will ever get to it.
Oh.
We're going to build a little dome over it or something. Oh, God. Now, of course they dump.
Yeah, they didn't have any way. They hadn't built a preparation, whatever you call it, to take care of the waste. Hell. So, yeah, I guess, Joe Lovett got after him.
Busted him?
Yeah, busted. Yeah. They cried wolf. Uncle.
Yeah. They cried. You got another one for us?
Yeah. Let's see. You said a catch. You said a word that got me thinking of a song. What was the word? Now, I can't remember the word you said.
Withdrawal.
Rain. You said rain.
No, I said no. We did a song about rain.
I know. It's called Fire and Rain.
Oh, you got another. Okay.
I don't know. It's just question.
T. Page Del Porto working the rain circuit.
I may lie to you. No, this one I did at Burger Cart.
Okay.
I'm just like damn politician. You can't trust a word I say.
but at least if that's the case, we're still going to have something pleasant that follows it. You're just fibbing about a song. Right? What they fib about gets toxic and deadly.
Fire and rain, though.
All right.
I did write this for that massive protest. The Cold River Mountain Watch protest in Massey. It come out to be a urgent cry for help to to those people in our past, like Woody Guthrie, Bob Dylan, Neil Young.
Thank you, Doug.
Get involved.
Well, I'll hush up and you talk and then you sing, okay?
All right.
Keep page now for them.
I ain't seen fire, I ain't seen rain, but I've seen the mountains coming down. I ain't seen fire, I ain't seen rain, but I've seen the mountains coming down. Brother Taylor, where are you now? Brother Taylor, can you hear me now? Happening here. How can a mountain just disappear? Well, I see fire and I see rain and I see the mountains coming down. Brother Steels, where are you now? Hey, brother Steels, can you hear me now? Can a mountain exist before it was yours? This land was his. Brother Dylan, where are you now? Brother Dylan, can you hear me now? Are you with me now? We share my coming down.
gonna build that coal silo.
Yeah, that's a nice little call-out, Paige.
Well, I hope somebody hears.
But you know, I mean, there's a lot. Well, there's a lot of truth in everything you've sung tonight, but there's a lot of truth in that in particular.
Yeah.
Because it's
see where you're coming from.
It's a new activism that's called for.
That's right. Well, you know, you can't blame the people, the singers, because you know these monopolies of our airwaves. Number one, wouldn't play it if they wrote it, you know. And number two, the record companies wouldn't record it.
Well, that's true, and that's why so much of this stuff falls to independent artists who do what they do so well, like you and others who have taken up this issue. But we all see what happens with when somebody with a with a name or what have you gets behind it. You know, look at the buzz that got created by Ashley Judd's action last week.
Yeah, that was good.
It was very good. And so, you know, to have people get active and get busy with this issue does do the movement good.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I hope you play that out and about, play it in bars, play it wherever you are.
Yeah.
And, you know, because this is all just sort of, zeitgeist stuff. And eventually, you know, zeitgeist. We use fun words like that here. Cause, you know, we're liberal.
Would you call me?
We're liberal, we're progressive, and we can use that cause, we don't have to worry about right wingers being confused by not understanding it. But it gets out there into the sort of public mind space, and eventually maybe somebody does have a look, and maybe somebody does think a little bit about what it all means. Let's take a little break. You got a couple more for us before the night's out.
Well, here's a thing relating to what you're saying there. Look, what happens to Dixie Chicks when they just said,
"Well, there you go."
One ill word towards George Bush. I mean, that's awful.
Yeah, and I mean, well, it became a verb to get Dixie chicked. Really? You know, yeah, to have people try to drive you out of your business, to burn your albums. Yeah.
Did Limbaugh come up with that one?
No, that's what we called it. You know, it was Clear Channel Radio, who had the big Dixie Chick record burning parties, and because they dared say they were ashamed that George Bush was from Texas.
Nice.
Yeah, classy.
Yeah, very.
Right-wingers, good people.
Yeah. Good people.
Family values, salt of the earth.
Americans.
Yeah. God bless them.
I feel so bad for them, man. I just...
Well, shoot, yeah.
I mean, how could that happen? It's stupid. Well, you know, there was... I remember when Bush was running the second time, somebody said... I'd live in a box for President Bush. Well, here's your box.
Yeah.
You ever heard that? Here's your sign, stupid.
Yeah.
Here's your box. You got it.
Yeah. In fact, our horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner was working that turf over the weekend and talking. Here's your sign. Yeah, exactly.
Really?
Yeah. He's a dandy. Dr. Rick is. Let's see. Where we go from here, we probably ought to take a phone call or two, and you can gear up for a couple more if you've got a couple more you'd like to put out there for folks' enjoyment. Okay. So that's what we'll do. There we go. And look, we're just doing this on the fly. We'll make some microphone noises here and there. Let's see if we still got somebody on the phone. Nah, doggone it, lost him. So, if you've got something on your mind, be under your bonnet, burr under your saddle, feel free to light it up. You know the phone number here, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4 head on. I want to mention, T-Page Del Porto is in the studio right now. But also, we have Paul Corbett. See what happens. Professional speaking person, Paul Corbett Brown, and Natalie Gray in the studio with us. And Paul is a world renowned photographer of absolutely breathtaking talent. He goes around the world and captures images that will forever. Stay in your mind. I think the first time we met, we talked a little bit about some of your work in Africa. Let me just turn. I'm not trying to put the spotlight on you or anything, Paul, but just so folks can know a little bit about what you do. Here, this will be the easiest way. Just take the thing out and hand it to you. There we go. How long have you been doing this, the photography lifestyle?
Since I was 12.
Okay, then that qualifies officially as a lifestyle then. You have been, it was Rwanda specifically, wasn't it, that you went to, or was it Uganda?
Rwanda,
okay. I'm sorry, I'm not nearly as dippy as I seem. I only play one on the radio. But you went there and cataloged and documented the after effects of the slaughter there. I assume that's got to have made you a changed man.
It definitely changes you. It's an ongoing project too. I'm still returning to Rwanda every year to work on that project. People had this misconception that once the violence stops in a genocide that everything goes back to normal, but in truth it's generations of healing, and even 15 years after the 94 genocide, Rwanda's still got a long ways to go. There's a lot of healing to be done there.
It's not like the genocide ended and suddenly there was prosperity and all the things that caused it in the first place went away.
Exactly.
I did some reading on it not too awfully long back in one of Jared Diamond's books, and he posits a population-based approach to why it happened as well, and talks about the fact that, you know, you had upwards of 15, 25, 30 people living per half acre, and subsistence farming on that, and no wonder a place like that explodes.
Well, I mean, it's easy to oversimplify those things. And, of course, it is true that Rwanda is the most densely populated nation in Africa, or at least one of the most densely. But when it really comes down to it, I mean, it's genocide is something that we continuously say never again, never again, and yet it's happening again, and it's happening right now. And things are heating up in the Congo right next door to Rwanda. A lot of that's related to the genocide, to that struggle that went on there. But again, I mean, I think it's dangerous to oversimplify what caused the genocide. Mostly it's because we just haven't learned to get along yet. If you want to oversimplify it, I mean, the first thing we do is we divide ourselves. As a species, we divide ourselves. We have all kinds of names and labels and things that we do. And then once we divide ourselves, we dehumanize the other, them. It's them.
Right, right, yeah. And they're not people like we're people.
They're not people like we're people. They're not smart like us. They're not white like us. They're not rich like us. Whatever you want to fill in the blank. And then once you've dehumanized the population, the destruction of that population is nothing. Nobody thinks anything about killing a mosquito or a cockroach.
Even if it's one that's on two legs and has the same DNA structure and stranding. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. I asked you because I knew you had a website. PaulCorbettBrown.com, and that's PaulCorbettBrown.com. PaulCorbettBrown.com. There's examples of your photographic work, your photojournalism, your essays and such on the website. The card that you handed me is breathtaking to me and heartbreaking. There's a certain amount of irony involved with it, Paul, because I have said in the course of trying to explain what it's like to live here, to live in a place that is constantly under attack, where residents who have been nine generations on the land are deemed to be less worthy of residency or basic human rights, and that's what we're talking about in the mountaintop removal fight.
It's absolutely a human rights issue.
Yeah.
It's a social justice issue. It's not just about the environment. It's about how the people are being abused here.
Yeah, and the Judy Bonds has talked about those nine generations. I got to counting. And around here, not specifically on this acre of ground, there's only five generations on this acre of ground. But right here in this region, my people have been here since the early 1700s. That's 9, 10, 11, 12 generations.
And mine as well.
Yeah, we are indigenous peoples at this point. I mean, granted, we're not, we supplanted indigenous peoples, and there's some karmic debt involved with all of that. A week or so ago, I was trying to explain that in the course of being, or in the flow of being an Appalachian person subjected to mountaintop removal, that I have a bit of native sympathy for Palestinian people, because they too, being run off of land that they've been on for not nine generations, nine dozen. And so then you hand me this photograph of a man with his hands over his face in an attitude of what appears to be either grief or prayer.
Both.
And the caption says, "A Palestinian man mourns at the graves of his ancestors in the Jordan Desert near the Dead Sea. Israeli authorities will not allow the maintenance of the grave markers, and they are slowly decaying into the landscape, taking countless decades of history with them." You know, you erase someone's history, and that's another step in erasing their humanity.
Well, and it's absolutely part of the international definition of genocide. And I know we're not supposed to say such things, but
no, it's okay. You can say them.
And it's the same thing that's happening in West Virginia, realistically. And I use this word cautiously, but it is a form of genocide. It is the devastation of a culture, of a group of people.
Deliberately done.
It's deliberately done.
And see, the thing that jumped out at me when I saw this is, you know, there are bills pending in the legislature here in this state right now, Paul, that deal with this specific issue. I mean, is it just plain coincidence that two subjugated peoples are dealing with the same issue, the deliberate deliberate desecration of graves of their previous generations, their loved ones, their history? On the one hand, you've got Massey Energy, who routinely shoves cemeteries over into their valley fills. And here you've got the Israeli government, who is just by simply not allowing someone onto their sacred ground, makes sure that sacred ground goes away.
And there are places, for instance, near Van, family cemeteries where the coal industry has surrounded that cemetery, and granted they may not have completely desecrated that cemetery, but now those people have to get permission from the coal company to visit their own family graves.
Or the cemetery there at Cayford Mountain.
Right.
Where they have they've had bulldozers up there. They have they've sunk drill shafts literally through human remains. And at what point in time, Paul, is there a tipping point? I mean, you've been to Rwanda. You've seen the after effects of this kind of disdain for one's essential humanness. Is there a tipping point where people say enough or no more, or does it just gain momentum as it did in Rwanda?
It gains momentum, but I think it's more than people. It's more than just saying enough. You have to act it. You can't just speak about these things. You have to take action against them. I mean, it's not enough to sit on our couches or in our cars going down the road and gripe about it. We got to be willing to get out and do something. Take civil rights. It didn't occur because someday the politicians woke up and said, wow, we need civil rights in this country. I mean, that political will to create civil rights, and of course we've got a lot of work to do there still, but the political will for that came from social will first. The people had had enough, and they stood up and said, enough is enough. And they were willing to fight for it and struggle and suffer and be ridiculed and abused. But,
killed.
Of course, we had been abused.
Yeah.
The lack of civil rights was an abuse in and of itself. So it's a matter of we have to be willing to stand up. We have to be willing to make that difference. As Gandhi said, we have to be the change we want to see in the world.
And as we do, that's what makes what you do so important, is getting the images of this stuff, getting the images of those who are willing to stand up, those who are willing to fight back, and getting it out to, and letting people see what's going on here, so that I suppose it's an unfair comparison, and I don't mean it unfairly, but there was an entire globe almost that looked away and didn't want to see the things whose after effects you have seen, Paul. And if we make people look at things like what's going on in Appalachia, maybe we don't wind up depopulating this region according to the grand master plan of the extraction industries. Is that fair?
I think so. I think that people do have to become aware, and then that awareness really has to create an urgent response. For instance, like right now, I think a lot of these issues with mountaintop removal and the energy industry, we've been so snowballed, and the smoke screen and the mirrors and all this stuff. The issues are very simple. It's not about jobs. It's about survival. I mean, West Virginia has been told for the entire history of our state that coal is the answer for us, and yet we're still neck and neck for the poorest state in the union. We have some of the poorest infrastructure, the poorest health care, the poorest education. I mean, the list goes on and on. At what point will coal be good for us?
When does the prosperity come?
When does that happen?
I got to share something with you. I'm looking it up in my email right now. And I, maybe people are tired of it by now, but I was just blown away by this. I hope that I've read this a couple of times on the air in the last week or so. We have a listener who is nickname here on the horn is Reverbo, and he sent along. And I'm gonna keep reading this until it sort of burns itself into my brain, and I can just repeat it by heart. I don't know if you're a Kurt Vonnegut fan, but in 1973 he published a novel called Breakfast of Champions. In 1970, not far from where Page was born and raised. They opened the first mountaintop removal job in 1970. By 1973, Kurt Vonnegut had already tapped into, and that was his genius. He could see something happening in the now and extrapolate it out into the future. And in 1973, this excerpt comes from Breakfast of Champions. And like I said, I'm going to read it until people start writing in and begging me not to read it anymore. Because the level of prophetic vision is just breathtaking. And what he wrote, it's just part of chapter 14 of Breakfast of Champions. The truck carrying him was in West Virginia now. The surface of the state had been demolished by men and machinery and explosives in order to make it yield up its coal. The coal was mostly gone now. It had been turned into heat. The surface of West Virginia, with its coal and trees and topsoil gone, was rearranging what was left of itself in conformity with the laws of gravity. It was collapsing into all the holes which had been dug into its mountains, which had once found it easy to stand by themselves. They were sliding into valleys now. The demolition of West Virginia had taken place with the approval of the executive, legislative, and judicial branches of the state government, which drew their power from the people. Here and there, an inhabited dwelling still stood. He marveled at how recently white men had arrived in West Virginia, and how quickly they had demolished it for heat. At some point in time, I got to find somebody who does calligraphy or something and get that just put up on my wall and look at it every day and realize the truth of it. Because it's that penultimate sentence there. Here and there, an inhabited dwelling still stood. Because ultimately, that's what we're talking about. This is a deliberate attempt to depopulate an entire region of the United States, whether it's central Appalachia, or whether it's southern West Virginia, or down into the westernmost tip of Virginia, or eastern Kentucky, or eastern Tennessee. The goal is depopulation, and they will accomplish that by as the saying goes, by any means necessary. Whether it's poison, whether it's economic ruin, whether it is violence, after a while, and it's just started in the last year or so for us here. I can't imagine what folks. I can't imagine living with it every day for years, because this has been going on for a decade of virtually every day massive bombs going off around your home. It's 3 million pounds a week.
It's like the bomb that went off in Hiroshima is being dropped every day in southern West Virginia.
Yeah, and it makes it all the more stark and all the more amazing that there are people who are willing to stand up and say no, and it makes them heroes. It makes them among the bravest people that this country has to offer. It makes them role models. It makes them it makes them fit and worthy people for our emulation. So it was 5 years ago when I first learned what was going on down in the Coal River Valley, and people like Bo Webb and Judy Bonds and a number of Nanette Nelson, Patty Seebach, all these people made me welcome, and were more than happy to tell me anything that I would want to know about what their lives were like. And they told me 5 years ago, Paul. They said, if we don't stop it here, he said, Bob, it's coming to you. It's coming to everybody who lives in this state. It's coming. Because they will not be happy until they've got it all.
That's exactly right, and that's the plan, to get it all. At whatever cost. At whatever environmental cost, at whatever human cost. It doesn't matter. They just want it all. And we're going to let them do it for heat. Just
cold
for that.
Cold keeps lights on.
Well, not at my house. My house runs completely off the sun, and it has for 4 years.
Wow.
Completely off the sun.
One of the things that we have established as a goal, you know, Appalachian Power finally got around to telling you that if you were willing to pay a little bit extra money, you know, you could buy wind energy. So we do that. But one of the goals that I have is to, and don't think that the irony is lost on me that all this stuff is electrical. One of the goals I have is to try to find some way to put up wind, a consumer-based wind turbine and put solar panels enough around here that when we open these microphones, we can say that beyond any shadow of a doubt, not a thing that is happening here is doing the least harm to any West Virginia community. And it will happen. We had a vision of even creating this, and we talked a little bit about this before we came on air. And if we can pull that off, we can do that as well.
And you can. There are as many solutions to the energy problem as there are people who consume it. There's not one simple answer. There are 300 million simple answers in this country.
How much of a learning curve did you have to traverse in order to get off the grid?
Well, I wouldn't say that it was as simple as turning on a light or as simple as calling the power company. I made a couple of goofy mistakes, but I don't think it was overwhelming. And when you consider the long-term implications of continuing to use electricity created by coal or nuclear or whatever, I think for me it was a worthwhile endeavor to take the time to learn it. And truthfully, since that time, even with the simple mistakes that I made, I've had more consistent electricity than my family or other people in the community.
Wind blows at 40 miles an hour, you're not sitting in the dark?
I'm not. Or ice storms, or
I don't want to get too personal or anything, but was it backbreakingly expensive chore to accomplish?
It wasn't really. I have about $3,000 in my whole system. Now, I want to clarify something. For one thing, you have a lot of people who say that solar is not viable or wind is not viable because they can't produce enough energy. Part of the problem is not that they won't produce enough energy. It's that we demand to consume too much energy.
Hear, hear.
I want to just say, for the record, globally right now, as someone who's been deeply involved in human rights for a very long time, electricity is not a human right. There is not one single person on this planet that has the right to electricity. Electricity is a responsibility. It is not a right. Rights are clean water, clean air, enough food, shelter. The overconsumption of any resource at anybody else's expense is no one's right.
We don't. I know exactly what you're saying. We don't have the. What's the old line from Camelot about might makes right, or what? And white doesn't make right either, because the massive amounts of resources being consumed are being consumed in the largely white world.
That's correct.
If you look at one of those satellite photos from space, you can pick out New York and Boston and Atlanta and Baltimore and Washington, D.C., Dallas, Atlanta, Chicago, Sydney, London, Paris, and all of those really, really bright spots with very few exceptions. White people places. Africa is still a dark continent, not because of the people who live there, but because of the way that the resources have been allocated. Some of the same may be said for a lot of Central Asia, the Central Indian subcontinent, and portions of Asia that aren't exactly on the Pacific Rim. They're not lit up. They're not lit up either. And these are telling indictments, if you will, of the way that we have allocated resources.
And we've greatly misconstrued the notion of want and need. You know, I don't think that anybody has to go back to the caves in order to save the environment.
Right.
But it's a matter of balance, and it's a matter of really deciding what we need and what really is important.
Well, precisely, and the question is, It takes resources to produce the kind of technology that you use at your home.
Of course. There's no way to walk on the planet without leaving a footprint. The question is, how big will that footprint be?
Well, yeah. And how hard is it to allow that footprint to be placed to be set down in places where it hasn't heretofore?
Right.
There's no getting around the benefits of electricity. What you describe as not a right is also, by the same token, it's a matter of priority, isn't it? When we're talking about it's a want and not a right, it's how we prioritize it. You know, does a house really need 5 televisions? You know, does there?
And
need
that's exactly the point.
Yeah.
Do we need 5 televisions? Do we need 3 refrigerators? Do we need all of this stuff? And the answer is really no. There's a lot of things that are even convenient and pleasurable. When I was in Indonesia last year, there's a group of women there working on environmental issues, and one of the first things they do when they go to communities is tell people, when you're finished charging your cell phone, unplug the charger. Now, that seems really ridiculous, doesn't it? Well, you take, in the United States, 300 million people, even if a cell phone charger only drew 25 watts, you do the math. 25 watts of electricity times 300 million people going 24 hours a day when you only need an hour, hour and a half to charge your phone.
Right.
Think of the waste. You're talking about gazillions of watts of electricity being produced for nothing more than people's own laziness to just unplug their iPod or their cell phone charger.
Exactly. It's not a matter of need. We got teenagers here. And you were one once, right?
It was been a while, but yeah.
Sometimes they can be a tough crowd to get a message through to. But that's one of my little holy grail kind of thing. Turn the lights out. You're not in the room. Turn the lights out. You know, something as simple as that. It doesn't have to, we don't have to work within the paradigm that the other side has set up for us. Because everything that comes from the mountaintop removal side of things is all apocalyptic. You know, if we don't blow up the mountains, the world as we know it comes to an end. Coal keeps the lights on. Only coal can provide electricity. If we don't blow up the mountains, you sit in the dark. And what you're talking about is an outright rejection, I think, of that kind of apocalypticism.
I do reject that wholeheartedly. And I also reject the notion that if we end mountaintop removal, we've somehow destroyed our ever hope of having anything wonderful in this state. First of all, ending mountaintop removal will not end coal mining, and it will not end our dependence on coal. However, it does need to stop because it's polluting the rivers, it's ruining everything, and it's irreversible for a very short and limited joy of a few people, a few people's profit, and a few people's
tiny
comfort.
Few people. I mean,
a very tiny few. Second off, nobody is suggesting we can stop mining coal tomorrow. It's impossible. It would never happen. But the journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step. Until, unless we are willing to move away from this, and we have to begin that move away from fossil fuels, not just coal, but all fossil fuels. Nobody's saying you have to go without electricity tomorrow and stop everything today. That's just stupid, and it wouldn't happen. I wish it would.
But that is certainly the image that that they try to create.
And the best Madison Avenue minds have created all of this image for the Friends of Coal and the coal industry, and
there
coal keeps the lights on, and we buy it just like we have to have all five exciting colors of the new iPod.
Right. Yeah. Sure.
We have to have a new, you know, appliances in our home every year because our old ones look dated. Nothing wrong with them. We just have to buy new ones. Think of them as accessories for your home.
You'll be proud to know that we moved an old Kelvinator refrigerator out of here about 3 years ago, and it had been in here for 35-40 years, but it got to the point where it was becoming a hazard. But that was from an era when we made things to last. I don't know if you've seen it. Have you ever been to storyofstuff.com, Paul?
No.
That's a gotta go. Storyofstuff.com. Little stick figure animation puts all of this in a perspective that's easy. Anybody can comprehend it. And one of the things they talk about is the deliberate construct of the consumer culture based on economic theories that were promulgated after the Second World War that included, and, you know, I mean, this isn't grassy knoll stuff. This isn't, you know.
No, it's not.
These were real conscious efforts that were made to change the way human beings interact with one another and interact with the so-called marketplace. The frugality of our forebears, you know, you know how your grandmother was, or your grandfather. You know, the people around didn't throw anything away. You know, Appalachian folks are often derided for having a car on blocks in the yard. Well, you know that car's on blocks? A, you can't get rid of it, and B, there's something in it you might be able to use.
True.
And as a consequence, you know, why would you throw away something like that that you might be able to use down the road? There's a resource conservationist mindset that goes with living in this region and with living in the South, and being literally self-dependent people. I'm going to PowerShift later this week. One of the seminars I'm hoping to sneak in on is gardening for something called gardening for climate change. You know, there's got to be. I'm sure somebody out there has calculated what it means in terms of a carbon footprint when you raise your own cucumbers or tomatoes instead of going to the grocery store and getting one of those god awful little genetically modified nightmares that's picked greener than an apple and sent north from Florida, Texas, or California. There's a real impact to all of that. This is all accomplishable stuff.
It's very accomplishable, and that's the part of the problem is that we're not looking into the real carbon footprint of all the consumption. This country just consumes. I mean, we buy bottled water from Fiji.
Oh, that drives me nuts.
How much carbon is involved to put water, a very dense substance, into a plastic container and ship it halfway around the planet?
Oh, you know, I think John Fox actually had that statistic on his show one night. It was some insane number of kilos of fuel that were required to send, not kilo, liters of fuel used to send a liter of Fiji water around the. And the same thing applies to water from France or water from the glaciers of Finland or
anywhere.
And all of that is created by a marketing strategy that says that American people know that we've already poisoned ours. That's why they don't want to drink it.
I wouldn't eat a fish or drink water from most of the streams in West Virginia now. As a boy, I never hesitated. It never crossed my mind as a child that I couldn't drink from any stream I wanted. It was always fine. But now we have fish with both eyes on the same side of their head from selenium poisoning.
Yeah, literally something out of the Simpsons.
Yeah,
and it's sad when social cartooning becomes a part of the reality of our local realityscape.
It's very sad.
Well, Paul, I'm glad we got to take this opportunity to chat just a little bit because you were sitting there and you're shooting video and you're shooting stills and we're having a big old time. I'm glad that you're getting to record all this, but I know that you're going to be gone again soon for another chunk of time. And we've been talking about having this conversation for, what, 2 years now?
I think so.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're finally doing it. I thank you very much, and I encourage people to go to paulcorbettbrown.com, paulcorbittbrown.com, and look at these labors of love. Because I get the feeling that though you're looking through a viewfinder, there's a hell of a lot of your humanity that goes into the images that you record.
Yeah, I think the most important piece of equipment any photographer carries is their heart.
Here, here. Paul Corbett Brown, thank you very much. And I'll let you get back to your day job, as it were.
Don't you think that...
What's that?
Don't you think that these, like you were talking about, the McDonald's people, they found out that, you know, a certain degree that the coffee permeated the permeate their restaurants and people drink more coffee. Don't you think that people have looked at that, at our water supply, and said, look, why should we clean up the water? We keep it dirty, they'll have to drink our bottled water.
Well, sure there is. What most people don't understand is that as compared between municipal water supplies, all other things being equal, municipal water supplies are subjected to much more rigorous purity standards than anybody bottling water out there. I don't care whether they're Evian or Perrier or Tyler Mountain or Poland Spring or Fiji. There are much higher quality standards. The problem, though, comes in when you take into consideration things like the things you learn if you go to a DEP meeting, where they say, "Well, mercury." I'm not kidding, Paul. They said this. Mercury is not deemed to be a byproduct of the mining process, so we don't test for it. Wish I was lying.
Downstream from it, so you don't test for it.
Right, exactly. So I mean that's the kind of thing you're dealing with. Paige, before you fire up another one, let's jump in here and grab the phones real quick, because we got a couple of people that have been sitting on hold. See what's going on here. Hey, welcome
here
to the program,
Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
Here, Brother Bob. How are we today?
We're having so much fun. I think we're all just going to bust.
Well, yeah, something's good going on in the man-made plateau of West Virginia. At least there's something good there, huh? No testing for mercury. My God.
Yeah, because it's not a part of the coal mining process. Because they say it's
well,
not.
Why would it? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it is just ridiculous. And it's actually, you're just talking about bottled water real quick. A lot of it is municipal water.
Sure it is.
Yeah, and they have people paying for the water twice. It's just unbelievable.
Well, you know, it's all P.T. Barnum and this way to the egress.
Oh, no doubt. And I'll tell you what, you know, I certainly see a lot of parallels between what's going on in Africa and places like West Virginia and anywhere else where there's, you know, a lot of resources that people want cheaply, and there are, I mean, they deal with it the same way, you know, in the proverbial they, but they deal with these situations in the same exact way. They divide and conquer. They create haves and have-nots. They rape the land and reap all the benefits from that and pay no price for it. I mean, you know, you talk about the Congo. I mean, what's going on in the Congo? They have, I don't know, 20 factions sitting there being armed by, you know, these semiconductor corporations, literally, from Belgium and so forth. And, you know, they're arming these guys to the teeth, and they want these, you know, it's coltan. They want that mineral. It's a really dense mineral, and it happens to, you know, be one of the only places it can be found is in the Congo. So what is it? You know, the place is subjugated. It's destroyed. It's, I mean, you know, these people kill each other and fighting over nothing, over dirt. And Yeah, I mean, and not for nothing, but this kind of thing just can't go on. I mean, and I hope that, you know, there is a renaissance of, you know, and I think there is. I mean, even though we have, you know, ridiculous jaglaws like that Shelby character from Georgia who doesn't believe that Barack Obama is an American citizen, and you got the freaks like Alan Keyes over here calling for, what would Alan Keyes be? What is this guy? Who is this guy? Where does he come from to say these things? I don't understand what.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Okay, back up, Albert. For those who may not have been scoring at home, what did Alan Keyes say?
He's not president. He's not. He doesn't, you know, match the rules in the Constitution. He is a dangerous communist.
Yeah, well, at some point, wasn't there a call for basically a coup d'etat against Barack Obama? I mean, it sure is what it sounded like to me.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I mean, it's, you know, this kind of red meat. I mean, I didn't really believe it, but, man, you know, I don't know, I guess I didn't believe it because I didn't think anybody could ever freak out so much. I mean, not with 30, you know, micro dots, and have I ever heard such freakish behavior than what the entire right wing, you know, spectrum paradigm that we have here in this country in terms of our divide and conquer. Their leaders have just absolutely lost their minds. I mean, it is crazy. They're crazy. Mad. I mean, just absolutely just sprayed roach, as Bob says, mad. They have lost it. I mean, calling for, the guy hasn't even been president for a month, and they're over here handling, talking about, you know, impeach. They were impeachment when he won the election. Remember that?
Sure.
We were talking about that.
And, Paul was out of mic shot when you said it, but it's a very trenchant observation. The reason it was easy to turn a blind eye to Rwanda is because they were deemed not to have any of those magic substances which corporate America and, frankly, corporate world deems to be so critically important.
Yeah. Maybe they'll find something there one day, but I think the whole continent is on a rising program. I mean, look at what they've done with Mugabe. I mean, look at this guy. I mean, you know, I don't want to hear nobody talk anything. I don't want to hear a damn word about Hugo Chavez, okay? Until people start talking about on the left, I'm talking on the left. I mean, I've heard people on the left saying, "Oh, Hugo Chavez." I mean, at least the guy has actually won elections. That, I mean, give me a break.
Well, let's hear it. Let's hear it for holding. Election. Yeah.
Huh?
Let's hear it for just holding the election.
Holy smokes! I don't think anybody's ever been elected.
Well, and you know, we've talked, Albert, about the so-called war on drugs, which actually is a war on people. And now you're beginning to see stories coming out of Mexico, and the words civil war are being actively bandied about, you know, as in a possible reality. They're wising up to the war on drugs and have been for quite some time. You can call it a war on drugs if you want to. But the fact of the matter is, at the end of the day, Albert, it is a war of conquest manufactured with so-called drugs out there as the stalking horse for it all.
Yeah, well, it certainly is. I mean, it's not only that. I mean, it's like an adjustable wrench. It fits a lot of different nuts and bolts, and it helps turn the machine, you know, the machinery's lug nuts. Because, you know, it's not even, you know, so-called budgets of drug czars and, you know, DEA agents spending $180,000 just to travel, you know, on a 7-hour plane ride. You know, I mean, we're talking about colossal waste of money, colossal waste of law enforcement. I mean, just absolute, you know, draconian measures against people that actually do these things. It's a loss of revenue. One of my things, you know, the thing that we do out here is we grow a lot of corn out here, which is which is another subsidized corn, coal, you know, these things. And it is one of these things that, you know, we have Mexican immigrants coming in and, you know, it's getting more and more. I certainly notice it. I mean, and I grew up on Long Island. Now, I'll tell you another thing real quick. You're talking about water. Just something came to my mind. I remember the atmosphere of what I felt as a little kid watching the city water project on Long Island. Now, Long Island is a just atrociously polluted place. It has one of the highest women breast cancer rates in the world or something. And the groundwater there is just decimated and disgusting, okay? But when I remember, I don't know why, but I remember when you said it, and I remember the feeling, thinking about when the city water was coming in. I remember it being like, oh, okay, it's going to be clean. See, I didn't grow up in the hills and the hollers. I grew up on in an industrial suburban
Long Island.
Cancer.
Yeah.
Long Island. Yeah, exactly. You know, and while the food may be good there, and there are things about it that are decent, there's a lot of things about it that are not decent. And it's almost like these places, these big giant suburban, population density, of just everybody stacked in like sardine cans. And I actually, as a little to think that the entire country was like that. I mean, just city upon city upon city upon city upon city. I mean, thankfully I got out of there and I got to see that it wasn't like that and the whole world wasn't like that. But you know what? As I've grown older, and I'm not that old, but as I do get older, I notice it happening more and more everywhere. And it's one of these things that I think that we have to start educating ourselves. I mean, people in Africa have to start educating themselves, and I know they do, and I know they try. I try to support them in any way, shape, or form that I can. But when we sit here and look at, when these right-wing freaks talking about, why should we be giving Africa condoms? Well, they just want to chase babies. That's another thing Keith said, remember? He wants to put the baby and kill it. He's an abomination, And that's his new word. It's Obama nation, and then Obama fascists.
Yes.
These people never stop. Right. They're so witty. Anyway, clever. They're so clever, aren't they? That's why they're where they are.
Just makes you want to put their drawings up on the refrigerator, doesn't it?
They're ridiculous. No.
Yeah, no, they are. Card carrying members of the Jack Acid Society. Absolutely.
Seriously, I mean, they're. You should hear them talking about, the Homeland Security. Now, it's funny. I mean, it's funny how the page turns. Oh, he's going to have martial law. I mean, all these things that, I'm a lefty. I am. But I felt was, I mean, especially to anybody.
The contracts for the FEMA camps with the barbed wire around them, those were not let by the Obama administration. They're very real, and they were let by the Bush administration. And here, here's the hint. They're not for them. They're for us. Yeah.
Well, it's funny that, just let's stay on that for one second, because I just kind of had a thought. I live really close to a former, current, who knows, Rex 84 place, okay, which is it's actually Reagan, right, and maybe even before that, right? But as far as I know back, I know it's Reagan, and I remember it was under, Ollie North with his, if the government, declare what would his contingency plans be. I can't answer that question. Then Senator, what's his name from Hawaii, who now is talking about world catastrophe, but Inhofe, I think, is that his name? He's sitting there telling me, we can't answer that question. We can't talk. We'll talk about it in closed doors. And that one guy was being a pest and saying, I want an answer to this question. Anyway, I don't know if you've ever seen that, but if you haven't seen that little thing, I should buy
it. I have.
All right. So you know what I'm saying. I live, and they used to say, and this is back in the 80s, they said, back right after the Cuban exodus of prisoners and all that other stuff.
Yeah, Mario Boatlift.
Yeah, exactly, and then Scarface, we got Scarface out of it, right? Anyway, they sit there and they talk in Mexico, right? They said, the Rex 84 is for all the illegal immigrants. Not for nothing. I mean, there are laws. Should obey them and this and that, but I certainly I feel the plight of people in Mexico who have the crops that they grow, and they can grow in abundance because they're the birthplace of these places, just like Ethiopia and coffee and Rwanda and coffee. Actually, I'm drinking some. It's absolutely fantabulous. It's unbelievable. Tastes like flowers and like caramel. What a fantastic coffee I'm drinking from Rwanda right now. Just Coffee Co-op, fair trade, completely direct line to the guys in the co-ops out there. It's just, that's one of those ways that I try to get my, you know, get these people 50 cents, which give them food instead of them having to sell gold. Dig for gold and then sell it, or dig for coltan and sell it, or cut down their entire industry and forests to make charcoal. Anyway, it's so ridiculous what's going on in Africa. My God, they could use panels. Anyway,
yep.
I'm sorry.
That's how it works.
But you know, that's, we got a lot of information. We got to get out there and this and that. But anyway, so I mined it back in the Rex 84 program, right? This is back in the day in the 80s and stuff. And man. They were talking about illegal immigrants, and boy, after all these subsidies with corn and all this over surplus and how we go into these countries with World Trade Organization and say, and the World Bank and say, okay, if you want, you know, all this money to build a palace with, you know, 30 feet story below and your nuclear power, all this stuff just for you and your family, you know, if you want to do that, well, we're going to have your water rights, and we're going to have to ask you to stop selling tomatoes and corn and blah, 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 blah. Well, what the hell happens to those people in Mexico, which is our, what, third largest trading partner? What happens to these people when they can't sell corn? It's not even worth to grow. It's barely, you know, and all they're going to do is eat corn.
Right, or what happens as what happened in Iraq. It was not lost on me, Albert, that the Bush administration had very specific production guidelines. You know, this, for God's sakes, this is the place that domesticated wheat.
Yeah.
And but thanks to Monsanto, we go over there and we say, you're not going to grow those strains of wheat that you've domesticated over the course of the last 7,000 years. You're going to grow Monsanto's Roundup Ready wheat or some genetically modified nightmare.
And you know what?
And we did that. We did that. We said that to them. We told them that's what they were going to do. Not because it was good for people who lived in the land between the rivers, but because it was good for a corporation that's housed in St. Louis, Missouri. So,
you know, honestly, I don't know which one of those two things that we've done to Iraq that are just you know, it's unacceptable and there's no apologies that can ever be done. I mean, that or depleted uranium. I don't know which one of those two things.
Well, it really is. It's really a toxic toss up, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's unbelievable. It's like mercury milkshakes. I know.
Hey, Albert, I'm going to run on, brother, because I want to get a couple more songs from Paige in here before the night ends up. And I really enjoyed the conversation, and I hope we'll talk some more as the week progresses.
Certainly, sir. I'll talk to you later. I've been thoroughly enjoying it.
All right. Take care, Albert. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye now.
All right. Take care.
Bye. And I'll try to hit a couple more phone calls, maybe go a couple of extra innings. But, I told Paige in the Musicians Union that I'd only work him through 9 p.m. Eastern. So let's get things fired up and, let me get back on the other microphone here and, let's see what Paige has, for us this time through. Okay, Paige. All right. All set.
Yeah. I got a little cherry song here. Can you believe it?
Cherry song?
Cheery.
Cheery. Okay.
Cherry song. Oh, man.
Cheerful. Uplifting, even.
I'm going to do this in my best Bob Dylan. People always say, you know, you sound like Bob Dylan. You know, he can't sing.
By the way, I got to ask you, you ever spend any time listening to John Prine?
Yeah. Yeah,
I thought so.
Well, you know, again, back in the day, but
you had a John Prine moment?
Yeah, no, I didn't have Prine. I did run into him in a parking lot in Nashville one time, and it was my brother's birthday, and I was writing a birthday card to my brother. I ran over there and had him sign it. My brother didn't believe that, John Prine. Didn't believe that happened. What the hell's wrong with him?
Okay, so what is this?
This is called Heaven's Kind.
Heaven's Kind.
Heaven's Kind.
All right, I'll get out of the way.
commuted on judgment day, man. Just dry the tears from your eyes. May your sins all be forgotten, cast away. May always be heaven's kind. Heaven's kind, heaven's kind. May always be heaven's kind. May your sins all be forgotten, cast away. May always be heaven's kind. Morning with a smiling face, because you have to see a brand new star. And those tiny drops of rain now falling from the sky, is only one thirsty flowers in your heart. Your heart, your heart. May the raindrops water flowers in your heart. Water flower to your heart. May you make the right decision once, twice. May you straighten up the mess you left behind. May you find that pearl of great price. May it always be heaven's kind. Heaven's kind. Heaven's kind. May it always be heaven's kind. And may you find that pearl of great price. May it always be heaven's kind. Heaven's kind, heaven's kind. Now may I always be heaven's kind. And may find that pearl, great price. May I always be heaven's kind. And when you find that pearl, great price, may you know deep in your heart. Heaven's
kind. Bravo. Works right. Better when I push the button in and make the microphone go. All right. We're about 11 minutes away from the top of the hour. You got one more before we wrap it all up?
Let's see.
Or we hit all the licks.
I got one more. I was thinking about, didn't really want to finish on this one, but hey, let's do it.
It's all cool. Right.
You were talking about Kurt Vonnegut. When did he write that book?
1973 was when it was published.
I wrote this song in 1973. Bangor, Maine.
No kidding.
No, Salem, Massachusetts.
Hey, we got listeners in Salem.
Do we?
Yeah.
I got a story about Salem.
Okie doke.
Have you ever been to West Virginia? Little Switzerland? Mountain State, poverty pocket, everyone knocks it, wag your head, say, sure it's a shame, but how relics we are given for a life we can't help living. And what, pray tell, have we done something wrong? Guess you're right there, miles on welfare. It just ain't fair, you dolly, say aloud. Poor man, poor man and wife. You must give it one more try. Poor man and poor man again. Your woman's growing awful thin. Poor man, poor man. Where is your not born to underscore you. I will not die if you're a Leviathan stone. If you must help the needy, but you yourself are greedy. Precious rich too, clutch your crave. Pick some pure flower. Have them sent to our house. Our place, general, my woman's grave. Poor man, and quiet. Must give it one more try. Poor man, again. Your woman's going off a pin. Man, poor man.
Page Del Porto.
Be honest, that was me clapping.
Nah, everybody knows the sound. No, everybody knows the sound of Bob's hands clapping. You can't get away with that. Page, thank you very much for the time you spent with us this evening, and thank you to Paul Corbett Brown. Thank you to Natalie Gray, whom I left out of this conversation like a total heel. Now's your chance. Anything just like speaking to you that needs to get said, anything like that?
Well, I've had a number of thoughts, but they're all, you know, the opportunity has gone. Maybe some other time.
No, the opportunity's not gone. No.
Well, you want to strike up another conversation?
Yeah, fire it up. I tell you what, if you don't care, come back over here to this chair and this mic, and we'll get this going again. that one's you.
Hey, everybody.
This is Natalie. Gray.
Yep.
And you work with Paul?
Actually, no. Paul and I are dating. We've been dating for 5.5 years.
Trust me, that's work.
It is work, yes.
I've been married for almost 16. It's Sweet. The longest job I've ever had.
Yep.
I'm sorry. I'm really, really a bad person. My father was this way, too. I'd be driving down the road, and he and my mother were married for 30 years and stuff, and he'd say, Margaret, look over there. And wherever my father's head went, the vehicle went.
Oh.
Okay? And so I come by it honestly. So when I swung around to engage Paul, I wasn't, like, ignoring you. I really promise I wasn't. It, you're impossible to ignore. But I'm a jerk. Out of all of this, anything that needs to be added?
Well, actually, I want to say that from a woman's perspective, living in a solar-powered house is extremely easy, and women should not be afraid.
No,
you can
really?
Still have your blow dryer, your curling iron. It'll be okay. The heat is on. It's okay. Go ahead. Take the leap.
It's okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was astonished when Paul mentioned how much or how little, actually, it went into, you know, solarizing your home.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, when you curling iron, blow dryer, whatever, I mean, there's no, Paul's not like the secret Soviet apparatus. The blow dryer must be turned off now, right?
No, there's no need for him to be a Nazi about it.
Okay, so do you do some of the traveling along with Paul?
Well, unfortunately, no. We have not been able to travel together. We've tried to on a couple of occasions for me to go and be his assistant, but maybe next time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not to make you give away your secrets. What do you do in the real world?
Well, actually, I am a student at Mountain State University.
Okay.
Yep. I am going for ultrasound.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm almost done. Mm-hmm. So thankfully, I'm ready to be done.
Well, you're moving into a growth field.
Mm-hmm.
I guess. That's the technical term.
For yeah. It,
so but you've been shooting all the while. Paul's been shooting as well. So I imagine there's going to be a lot of fun stuff out of tonight. So.
Oh yeah, I got a lot of great stuff. I got some good stuff of you too.
No, there's no such thing as a good
Actually,
photograph.
Don't.
No, there's no such thing as a good photograph of me. I mean, but
I'll show you. That's
okay.
Good.
Okay, that's cool. Yeah, well, we can always use a new Facebook photo or something.
That's right.
So send that along. Well, I felt bad about just sort of. Literally, physically turning my back, and it was just.
There's no other way around it. It's okay.
Yeah, it's
in the shoebox.
Right. No. These are the fabulous Opulent Horn Studios. Wait.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
Shh. Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight,
thank you very much.
Thank you to T-Page Del Porto. Thank you to Paul Corbett Brown. Thank you for the conversation, Paul. I really appreciate that.
T-Page.com.
Okay. Oh yeah. Another website. T-Page. P-A-I-G-E. tpage.com. Is your music up there?
MySpace also. MySpace has my more current.
Okay, more current music on MySpace. And
T-Page Del Porto.
Okay, T-Page Del Porto, all one word, no hyphens, no dots, no.
Right.
Okay, that's T-P-A-I-G-E-D-A-L-P-O-R-T-O.
Yeah.
T-Page Del Porto. tpage.com, T-Page Del Porto on MySpace. He's a friendly guy. If you friend him up on MySpace, he will certainly approve you, and there's lots of music to be gotten there. Thank you, everyone. And my apologies, but for one time, this time through, I'm not going extra innings tonight. I try never to leave blinking lights on hold, but this time I'm going to, just because I need to attend to some things at the end of the program. And make sure that everything is in order and folks have what they need. So my sincere apologies. Thank you to everyone. Thank you to you all for the time that you share with us in creating the program, whether by phone calls, by participation in the chat room, by the forum at headonradionetwork.com, your emails, across the board. Thank you for your participation. Thank you to those of you who, a very significant contribution that came in this weekend that will help us meet expenses going forward in what has been a very, very lean month. You know I don't give out names, but you know who you are. Thank you for all of your contributions that have rolled in the last few days. Thank you to Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. You know now, based on, it's not just me. Anybody who talks about what these people do will reference their heroism, their inspiration, their dedication to a better future. They fight upstream for all of us who live downstream. CoalRiverWind.org and CRMW.net. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you.